Hell yeah, Corn Fed Podcast, baby. Let's fucking go.
Let's fucking go.
Let's fucking go.
Let's fucking go.
Whoop whoop.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to season two of Corn Fed, the podcast. Whoop, whoop, whoop. The new metal podcast for and by girls. We're back, finally. It's been a long time. No, see, here. I don't know what you say for a podcast. But we're so excited. And I am one of your co-hosts, Cayenne, and I am here with...
DJ Jazzy Jeff. What's up, everybody? No, just kidding. hi. I missed you. We missed you so much. I can't believe we're here. I can't believe... that we have returned.
I know, and it's been a couple months. I was like looking into it. It's only been like, it hasn't been as long as I thought it was, but it has not been over a year, which is a relief.
I thought we for sure were at like a year.
Yeah, I definitely thought we had like lapped it, but we did not. But we are back and we are super excited to be coming back with, I think, an absolute heater choice, which is Slipknot's album, All Hope Is Gone. Very excited to cover this one. Most people probably know it from the most famous single of theirs, Psychosocial, I think, probably, right? The most famous?
It's gotta be.
Yeah, I mean... I have, like, in my notes, specifically just Psychosocial as a meme. and I feel like if it got to that level, it has to be the most famous. And it's probably one of the more famous nu metal songs in general.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was doing, like, very light, quote-unquote, research. Yes, I was on Wikipedia. right before we started recording. So I do know that it is their only album that's hit the top 100 or top 200, which off of just that, probably.
That's actually really surprising. I would have thought that Iowa would have at some point, but I guess they are like, even when they were like doing nu metal, like at the peak of nu metal, they were like a much more like abrasive, like, form of it than I think a lot.
They certainly have a look.
Yeah, they have a look, and also like I think they're closer to like, because I think like a lot of the nu metal bands that got really famous were closer to either rap or rock music than they were to metal music.
Yes, yeah.
And I think Slipknot is kind of the most famous one that is the most like close to traditional like metal music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I would agree.
Although they do kind of, and we'll get into it a little bit, but they do kind of stray away from towards like the back half of this album, I would say, where it gets a little bit softer.
Yeah, it does.
I love it personally.
I don't hate it, which I think coming from me historically, that's like saying a lot in terms of slow songs. Because yeah. I just check out immediately. I don't hate it. I don't love it, but I don't hate it.
Well,
I will say Corey Taylor has a very fuckable voice, and so
really shockingly like horny voice.
We were okay, so I don't know if we want to just dive in, but I'm just gonna dive in. Fuck it, it's been a year, let's go. so I will be fully honest, Cayenne came to me and said we should do this album like a while ago, and then our busy ass lives, and we live on opposite sides of the country, got in the way a lot, so it took a while to actually finally hammer down today as the day for recording. In that time, I never finished this album until after we decided we were going to record today. because I would get through like, there's another two heavy tracks after Psychosocial, I think. It might be one. And then I'd be like, okay, well, this is not fun. And I'd start over. But we, when we finally were like, okay, we're doing this, and Valentine was like, I will set up your microphone, blah blah blah. Actually, I don't think I was with Valentine last time we did this podcast, so that's my boyfriend. Anyway, he set up the microphone, and we were like, okay, we're doing this, and we were listening to the album on a bunch of drives, and I was like, Corey Taylor has boy band voice. Like,
he does.
I don't know why it took me so long to like have that click, but it has to be part of their, like, what catapulted them to the nu metal heights during that time, because there's one song where they straight up sound like Incubus, and I'm like,
yeah, there's like a couple moments on this album that are a lot more traditional than I think like the like real like abrasiveness of their self-titled or Iowa were. And volume three had a little bit of this, but definitely not to the same level. But yeah, there's like some songs that are like straight up, yeah, like closer to alt rock than they are like what we think of when we think of Slipknot.
And it's funny that coexists with Psychosocial on this record, because I think Psychosocial is also what we think of when we think of Slipknot. And definitely. So for their most archetypical sound and their most like, what, like, this isn't Slipknot sound being on the same record is kind of funny.
It is.
I just want to say that this record came out in 2008. So I was like 14. Cayenne, I think, was like 6 weeks old.
Oh my God. I was 10. I'm not that much younger than you.
I had to make that joke. I'm sorry.
Yeah, fair.
But Psychosocial was insane. Like, it was a cultural reset.
Yeah. I mean, it was, I think, the first time since like the early 2000s that nu metal was like super popular again, like that it had like a big hit.
Yeah, I don't feel like anyone was listening to nu metal anymore, except for like Linkin Park, but Linkin Park was already well past their turntable days, if you know what I mean. Like, at this point, like, they were, I think that Minutes to Midnight came out maybe a year or two later.
And I mean,
I'm
like,
not even sure. It might have been the same year, actually, because my memories are so crisp of like this time in my life, and it's all the same people, same cast of characters.
Yeah. I mean, Linkin Park was definitely like, they were also just in a completely different stratosphere. Like, they were like a famous band. Yes. Like, whether they were nu metal or not, they had just gotten to the point of being like celebrity.
They were definitely above their genre. Yeah. In terms of fame. So,
and they were go ahead.
Oh no, go ahead.
I was just gonna say, they were also like one of the only nu metal bands whose sound wasn't like immediately dated, I don't think. Yeah. And like, that's not a slander. I mean, obviously, we're doing a nu metal podcast. I love nu metal. Like, I'm not like saying that as like a super negative thing or anything.
No.
But like, I mean, you listen to like Limp Bizkit, and you're like, oh, this could have only come out between the years of like 1997 and 2003.
Exactly. Yeah.
Whereas like Linkin Park, I think that even like stripping their celebrity status away, like if a song like Numb or like, I mean, really any of their big hits like came out today, I still think it would reach a similar level of success, because they are a very timeless sound.
Yeah. I don't know. It's interesting because I feel like I have no fucking idea what's going on with rock music right now.
Me neither.
I'll be real. Like, I go into our group chat and people are talking about bands, and I'm just like, I have no idea what you guys are talking about. Have you guys heard Plan B by Megan Thee Stallion?
Great. So good. Yes.
I'm just like, I have no clue what you people are talking about. Love you to death. I'm gonna go listen to not that. But truthfully, I feel like I'm at a place in my life where I don't know what's going on with anything in terms of music. I'm just vibing. Like, I have my I have my 10 artists that I like, and they all do songs with each other, so it's like working. But anyway, so I couldn't say that In the End or Numb would reach the same levels today, but they should.
Yeah, definitely. But I do think there's something that even if they wouldn't reach the same levels, they're one of like few like nu metal acts that you can like, you could probably show somebody who's not familiar with and they wouldn't immediately be like, this is from the early 2000s. whereas like, I do think that like, and I think Slipknot is that way a little bit, but again, they're, I think, a little bit less accessible because of how abrasive a lot of their music is. And I think that's what made like the meteoric rise of Psychosocial so like impressive in a weird way.
Yeah.
It's definitely not a song that like pulls any punches either. Yes. Like, I don't think there's anything about it that feels like they were like doing it to make a hit.
Definitely not. And that's to me one of the more impressive parts. It's like, because I remember having normie friends in 2008 who would not be listening to Slipknot, who were losing their shit over Psychosocial.
Yeah.
And like, suddenly my dumbest friend became very deep, like, because of Psychosocial. it was definitely not more accessible. Like, I think Before I Forget is their most accessible song, which honestly, there is a little bit of a like cousin songs a little bit between that and Psychosocial, but I don't feel like they were pulling any punches. And I think that it's just so good. It's one of those songs, it's undeniable. You know, you hear it for the first time and it just shakes you to your core. Like, you stop whatever you're doing. It for me, at least, it was that way.
Definitely. I mean, it's infectious, and like everything about it was so like steeped in like kind of this like odd sort of like cultural mysticism, I guess, for lack of a better term, where like, again, like Slipknot was pretty big in like the early 2000s, but like you said, like they never really reached like the chart topping heights or anything like that. And then like the music video for it is so like cryptic and bizarre. Mm-hmm. And you have like, you know, people in cornfields with like fires going on, like they're all wearing like masks and jumpsuits, which like for people who are familiar is obviously nothing new with Slipknot, but for a lot of people it was.
No, you're so right about that, that like mysticism that surrounded. I mean, I started listening to Slipknot because I felt like they made you look cool. Like, I was 12. Yeah. Like, I can admit that. I can admit that as a grown up. I was 12 years old. Of course I started listening because they seemed like they would make you look cool and hard.
Yeah. I mean, like, I think I might have mentioned it when we did the self-titled, but like, I remember like when I was in seventh grade, and I would just like walk around like my middle school and I was just like blasting like this album and like People Equal Shit and Heretic Anthem. Right. And I was just like, and I thought I was just like the coolest fucking like, you know, like middle school girl in the world.
It was a band that really took what you wanted to express about yourself and just like to a main artery. There's no like beating around the bush. Like, there was no subtlety in regard. Like, this is it. This is me.
Yeah. And what I think is like kind of so impressive about them is they kind of strike that like fine balance between being unique enough that you feel like you feel some sort of connection with them, but they're also vague enough about everything that you can really, like you just said, like imprint almost anything about yourself that you want to onto them. Mm-hmm. Which I think is like a really impressive thing to be able to do in art, where it's like, oh, like you feel like you know enough about this person, but also they're not like oversharing to the point that like you can't really like project yourself onto it in any way. And I do think like a big part of that comes from like how like, I mean, relatively simplistic. I mean, like, not like in terms of like, you know, it's not just like, I mean, it's not like early, like I Hate God lyrics where it's just like the most like you know, straightforward, just like fuck everything or whatever. Like there's like, you know, like some complexity to like the vocabulary and everything, but like it's not particularly aimed at anything. It's kind of like an aimless sense of like alienation and anger that especially I think like when you're at the age that both of us like found them is something that you can really imprint because you are also lost and aimless and you have a lot of things to be angry about, but you're still figuring out how they relate to you specifically.
Maybe we still have, that has never gone away. So
no, definitely not.
Maybe that's what makes nu metal so fucking good.
I think it is, like, genuinely. Like, I think it's, like, one of the first kind of, and I think, like, what makes it such, like, a kind of intense, like, emotional unifier for people who are, like, really into it is it's kind of one of the first, like, mainstream, like, forms of like abrasive music that is like completely unabstracted because like previously like that obviously like there were angry bands before, there was angry metal, there was like, you know, stuff like that, and then there were like underground bands that weren't as abstract and were angry. Like I mean, like you have like, you know, like early like, you know, like 90s, like Memphis rap and stuff like that. But like, those were not nearly as famous or popular. But like, it's one of the first, like old metal was so abstracted. Like you listen to like like Black Sabbath. And like so much of it is just like about like wizards.
They're just dudes being cool.
Yeah, and it's like angry and like kind of intimidating, and same with like Metallica, and then like a lot of it is also like, I mean, a lot of like 80s and like late 70s like metal is like anti-war but like done in such like abstract language that it doesn't really feel like you're like, it's not like the same as like listening to like Gematria on this album, which is like directly saying like fuck the United States, like right. A lot of it is much more just like
great song in my top three.
Absolutely, it's a mine too. But like a lot more of it was like, I mean, like the song One by Metallica, which is like a like all like a reference to I think the book is Johnny Got His Gun about but like, you know, like you have stuff like that, obviously.
It's so impersonal, you know.
Exactly.
I'm sorry, like my boyfriend's mom went to high school with one of the guys from Metallica, so it's not it really cuts through that it doesn't feel like directly related to what someone's going through, you know. I mean, it's good and it's important, but it definitely doesn't feel personal.
And it definitely kind of in a way almost feels like an aestheticization of anger, where it's like you're kind of like looking for imagery that could be used in like to express like a feeling of anger rather than being angry at something. Yeah. If that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh no, sorry. You go ahead.
Oh no, I was just gonna say, whereas like on this album, like a lot of it feels like you're being angry at something and you're trying to like grapple with the words to describe that anger. So like I think that's where like a lot of the very kind of like maybe like a little bit vague but lyricism comes from is it's like trying to find the exact words to express how righteously angry you are at something.
You know, I think a lot about whether nu metal is good because it is intrinsically good, which yeah, or because of our particular relationship to nu metal as women, and like why this podcast is specifically for the girlies. But
yeah,
it is, thinking back and looking back, it is like a place where women could yell.
Yeah,
which is not something that women have a lot of spaces in, you know, where they can yell and it's not, I guess, demonized or means something else. Like you can just scream. And that to me, especially as someone who struggles with anger, like I feel that I don't get angry enough. Like, mm-hmm. I should be more angry. It was catharsis for me. It was like panacea, you know, like to have something where, although I didn't have the words or a safe place to be angry as a child or as a teenager, nu metal was that place. It was the first place of my life where I was able to scream.
Definitely. I mean, I think you're spot on about that, honestly. And just, yeah, like, we've spent like so much of our lives like trying to successfully, like to varying degrees of success, like convince ourselves that we're not as angry as we deserve to be. And like having that kind of place put out where you can just like, somebody is bluntly saying, oh, actually everybody is treating you badly and you deserve to be mad about it, mm-hmm. is such a freeing experience. I mean, like, just like the albums that we've already covered, like with this, with Kitty, I mean Kitty especially, obviously, but Korn, like they're self-titled, like just somebody coming out and saying like, yeah, like bad things happen to you all the time and you can be mad about them. And it's not some sort of like indictment of you. It doesn't make you this like evil, like demon woman or anything. It's merely
hysterical or exaggerating.
Yeah. You know, like you're not being, or like a bitch, you know, like it's like, no, like actually you're completely justified in a lot of this. And it's so funny, like saying that, like in, you know, it's talking about Slipknot right now, like obviously like a band of like all men, but like it's not as angry as they are. They're not masculine in their anger in any way, I don't think.
Right.
Like there's no chauvinism or like posturing involved in the anger.
Not from them, no.
No,
noticed at least.
Yeah, I mean, definitely from, and I mean, I don't know much about them as people, but like, mm-hmm. I'm just going off of the music itself. Mm-hmm. But like, I mean, definitely from like certain parts of the fan base, because men in metal are hell on earth. there is that, mm-hmm. but like, I think like in the music itself, it's so vulnerable and so. And I think that's the other thing, is like the anger in nu metal is very like, it's kind of like a depressed anger, not you know, in a way. And I think that's kind of what like separates, you know, I do enjoy them like and everything, but I think that's kind of what separates Limp Bizkit from a lot of other nu metal, is it's not really a depressed anger in Limp Bizkit. It's kind of like, but I mean, they're more of like a show than anything else. I think they're very like aware of the fact that they're performers.
Right. Yeah.
But like you compare it to like, yeah, just like going to like the other like famous metal bands like Metallica, Megadeth. I mean, even Black Sabbath, whom I like, and you know, all those, like there's a very like masculine like posturing aspect to the anger of like, we're dudes and we're angry, whereas like a lot of nu metal is just like, we're angry because otherwise we're just hopeless,
you know. I think it's that depressed anger, and it feels like there's a lot of layers of intersectionality there that kind of cut to the core of what this podcast is, really, which is, I mean, when you think about nu metal, its reputation post height of its popularity, and think about how society treats anything girls like or that girls have fun with, and then cut down to what makes nu metal different than a lot of other types of metal, which is really the emotional component of it. I think it's the crux of like what this podcast is, which is kind of crazy. It took us a season to figure that out.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, because yeah, there is so much about it that's just like you were saying, like just being like women and like enjoying things in the way that it's like written off and like treated as like goofy,
silly.
Or,
yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Or not. And I think this is a big one with nu metal, artistically inferior.
Yes, definitely. Like, it's somehow, like, inherently flawed. In a way that, you know, other, like, because you look at, like, other similar kind of phenomenons that weren't embraced by women, and the bad parts are written off as, like, cash-ins, or, you know, like, people who were just, like, trying to get in on a trend, whereas in nu metal, it's written off as being, like, an inherent flaw of the genre, that this is what it was always going to be reduced to.
Right. No, exactly.
Which, yeah, you're totally spot on about that, I think. And it is funny that, yeah, it did take us like a season to get to this.
We're like, what is it about this genre that just speaks to the core of us as women? Ah, yes.
Yeah.
Got it.
I was just gonna say, like, the way that, like, theatricality in nu metal is so like maligned and treated as like cheesy and corny, whereas like every other form of music is like just as theatrical and like honestly, in my opinion, way cornier. Like, I think like, anything that like David Bowie did is like 20,000 times cornier than anything Slipknot ever did,
except for his wife.
Oh my god, yeah. But like, I mean, I just think like, yeah, like there's like this like theatricality that's treated as something that makes it like goofy and impossible to take seriously. Like when people talk about like Slipknot, they're like, oh, like, isn't it, like, so, like, corny how they, like, wear masks and jumpsuits and whatever? And I'm like, I think it's, like, kind of, like, cool and fun and, like, actually, like, maybe they're just, like, embracing the idea of, like, aesthetics and performance in, like, a unique way rather than, like, necessarily being corny. Like, I don't see what's, like, inherently bad about that, the way that people talk about it. And same with like System of a Down.
I think they look gross and cool. Like,
yeah,
why
right?
Can't that just be it?
Exactly. And it's like, I do think there's just this like kind of like rejection towards, and I think like one of the reasons that like we like nu metal and our friends who do is because it is so sincere. And I think there's been like kind of for people like us, like, a re-embracing of sincerity in the wake of such like a deeply like cold and irony poisoned world.
Yes, ma'am. I mean, you know, I'm like the most sincere pilled person on the planet. So.
Yeah. And same here. Like, I mean, it's just, and I mean, again, like that's why we do this and talk about it. Like, cause I do think like the way that I remember like when we started this, we were talking about like the way that other people talk about nu metal and how they like kind of hide behind this like veil of like calling it bad, even though they enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you can actually just like say that you like something, like it's fine. Like just because it's maligned by the larger cultural sense doesn't mean that you have to like say, oh, I actually know it sucks, but I like it.
Right. This is like the crux of being a Glee lover.
Yeah.
Trying to explain to people that I know that it is bad on purpose, that I'm in on the joke, and that I sincerely, not satirically, love the show is impossible. I've given up. Like, the only thing I can do is just turn people, which I have. I mean,
oh, yeah.
You're proof positive. So,
oh, 100%. Like, and I feel that way about, like, I mean, pro wrestling, I think, is kind of similar.
Yes.
And a lot of the stuff that we just kind of talk about and, like, go back and forth and has come up on this podcast a lot, I think, is very much built on that. Kind of just, like, at a certain point, yeah, like, you're in on the joke, but also you do just genuinely enjoy this thing. Like, there's nothing, like, I'm, like, when I'm, like, sitting here and, like, when I was, like, watching Glee, like, I, like, took notes and everything about, like, crazy moments. But, like, I was, like, genuinely having, like, emotional resonance with a lot of the characters. And, like, really into it and, like, interested in, like, where it would go. Yeah. Like, it wasn't that I was watching it, like, cynically. which is how I feel a lot of people do kind of treat nu metal, which is in this very like cynical, like
above it.
Yeah, like, oh, I'm like reducing myself to talking about this thing that I like. And same with like pro wrestling, where like people kind of like when they talk about it, and I think like we see it a little bit in the way that people like have kind of like academized, I don't know what the right would be there, for pro wrestling specifically, where people like kind of like try to talk about it in like super academic terms, and like, yeah, it's like, no, like I just want to watch something and go like, hell yeah, like this fucking rocks, you know.
Okay. I did not watch pro wrestling as a kid. I don't watch it now. It's not really my cup of tea. I'm not against it. It's just, you know, whatever. Yeah. I'm not gonna go out of my way to look for it. But I happen to have a lot of mutuals, oomphies, that love wrestling. So, and they don't talk about it that way. They talk about it like they love it. So,
yeah.
So I have no idea what you're talking about. But I could absolutely, like, I have encountered that in the wild of like pro wrestling being looked down upon. Like that's not news to anyone. But no. I did not know about the elevating yourself over.
Yeah. Well, there's like people who love to talk about it, like they talk about like you know, like, oh, like how this is like actually like great like examples of like, you know, like storytelling, and like how like, you know, like, oh, like it's like perfectly paced and whatever. And I'm like, oh, who fucking cares, dude? Like, but yeah, I think like nu metal and you know, to kind of circle back, like this album and Slipknot in general kind of does a good job of being like just what it is, and completely like embracing, yeah, like being in on the joke, like embracing a little bit of like the goofiness and the over the topness of like the aesthetic that they've chosen, mm-hmm. but also just genuinely like leaning into it because it's something that they find interesting and cool.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what, like, fully circling back, like what makes Psychosocial so cool to me is, yeah, there's no like, there's no wink and a nod to the audience. There's no like, we know this is silly, don't you too? It's like fully just being like, no, like this is a expression of righteous anger and alienation, and everybody rallied behind it because I think that there is, like you said, like something undeniable about it.
It also just kicks ass.
It fucking rules.
I mean, the first time I heard it, I played it back like 100 times. Like, I'm not gonna lie. Like,
yeah.
And to this day, when I listen to that song, I don't think I could. It's rare that I can listen to it one single time.
Yeah.
Oh. I just have to hear it back. It's one of those songs where you're anticipating your next listen as you're listening to it.
Absolutely. Like, you hear like one part of it and you're like, I can't wait to hear that part again.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You're like getting through a section and already looking forward to the next time that you're gonna hear that.
Definitely. And like, yeah, I think it like you said, like it just fucking rocks. I mean, my first note, I like when I was writing everything down for like what to talk about, is just, this shit rips.
It just does.
And it is. It's just, it's infectious. It's, I mean, like the drums are nuts. The way that the vocals
breakdown
are.
Breakdown is just absurd. Like,
yeah. And like the vocals are, I mean, it's really impressive how actually singular Slipknot's vocals still are.
Mm-hmm.
To the point that, like, I mean, I listen to a decent amount of metal music, and like I went to a concert yesterday. I saw Elizabeth Colorwheel, Body Void, Jarhead Fertilizer, Mortiferous, and Primitive Man, right?
Mm-hmm.
The only band whose music I could tell you just from the vocals would be Elizabeth Colorwheel, because it's the only one that's like not like deep, like growling vocals.
Right.
But like any of those other bands, like if you just played the vocal track, I would not be able to decipher them from each other. And I think that it's like impressive that Slipknot, for a band as famous as they are, and a band that I do think has been copied to a certain degree, although
absolutely
not. Yeah, like they're difficult to copy just because of the nature of like being like a 9-person act and like being like, you know, a new metal band, which not that many people are still doing and everything, but like definitely are a copied band. Like, it's impressive that you can absolutely hear any of the vocals on this album and go, oh, that's Slipknot.
Right.
And that's part of what makes like Psychosocial like such an incredible like single and like singular experience is like, you listen to it and there's literally nothing that sounds like it, even though it was like a massively famous song and has been for what, how long ago was that? 2008?
14 years.
14 years. Yeah. Like, yeah. Oh.
It's almost exactly half my life.
God, that's crazy. But yeah, like it's actually kind of insane that there's been nothing that even remotely sounds like it that has entered the mainstream.
Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. And I think even like by Slipknot standards, like it's, I mean, it's probably, it might be my favorite Slipknot song, like the more I think about it.
It's going to be People Equal Shit for me, of course.
That's such a good choice too.
It's a matter of principle. It really is. They could write a better song tomorrow and I would still choose People Equal Shit.
Like mine is always Sick, just because like the first album of theirs I heard was the self-titled, and that's like the first song where I was just like, oh, this shit is crazy. But like, I think that like if I'm looking at it objectively, like Psychosocial has like a certain hold on me. And like lyrically too, it's also like an incredibly interesting song. And I think like a lot of this album is, because it does like kind of toe this line of being, you know, political and very kind of like anti. I don't know, like I said, I don't know that much about them as people, but it seems like they do have relatively decent political opinions.
Yeah, Corey Taylor seems like he's got his head on straight at the very least.
Yeah. So like, and I think that, you know, Psychosocial, All Hope Is Gone, Gematria, like they're all like very like deeply kind of like anti-military, like anti-America kind of songs, which rocks.
Of course.
And yeah, we love that here, as we know. But it is like, again, like I think that, because I mean, like Psychosocial, like one of the first lines is like, go drill your deserts, go dig your graves, then fill your mouth with all the money you will save. Like, it's not like extremely vague, but it is like enough that I do think like, even, you know, like we were both, you know, younger when we found them, and I don't think necessarily knew about all the, you know, intricacies of you know, international politics. But even we could listen to it. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I would say that for people my age, well, obviously not titans of knowledge when it comes to international affairs, everybody knew, you know, the gist of the scandalous side of the war. Like, that was a secret for anyone by 2008, at least not at my age group.
Yeah, definitely. And that's what I was kind of getting to, is like, we didn't know like super like intricate parts of it, but it was enough for us to know like, oh, like they're referring to how like greedy and like money hungry and like willing to commit genocide the United States is, which we've all seen by that point. Like, even though we were young and maybe didn't know like exactly like, you know, all of the like backroom dealings and like the names of the people involved, we knew how egregious and horrible it was. And I think like where they kind of succeeded with that is like they didn't do like it obviously, like we both love System of a Down, but like they didn't do the System of a Down thing where they can like go in and just like cite like Amnesty International papers. You know, like they were using like extremely accessible, angry like lyrics to just be like, hey, like we all know this is bad. Like, we all know this shit sucks.
Mm-hmm.
In a really cool way. And I think also like they're also like obviously like a very like, they're a band that thrives off of like abrasive and like, you know, counterculture imagery. And I think that shows through, and I think it works really well on this album when they are covering a little bit of like more political things, and they're not just, you know, like using like pentagrams or whatever, but they're also like saying like, hey, like, I mean, you know, literally the line, like, America is a killing name, like, you know, just saying something like that, or even like the refrain of that song, which is like, what if God doesn't care? And like using that kind of like American Christian imagery against itself and saying like, what if all this is actually just like apathetic and like evil for the sake of evil? In a way that I think is what makes them so successful and blunt is like kind of their greatest success there, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That is a great song.
Again, like just talking about like how just like this album also just rips. Like, yeah. I mean, it like the second that like that groove comes in and it, yeah, all of it is just incredible to listen to and how just like cathartic all of it is. And
I love the first, like, it really kind of a front-loaded album in terms of power.
Oh, and, yeah.
Which is hard on me, personally. but I got through it. I mean, there's one, like, towards the back that is a little bit powerful, but...
I mean, the title track is towards the end, and that song is pretty abrasive.
Yeah. I like the... Is that the final one? Oh, but yeah, that's a great track.
Yeah.
It pulled me back in, to be honest.
It's okay. Really fucking good.
I'm ready for another go. Honestly, like, I've said it throughout the episode, but Corey Taylor can really croon. Like, it's so weird to me, though, because, you know, his other project, Stone Sour, had, like, a top 10 hit at the time. Or not a top 10. A top 10 in the rock charts. Hit at the time. What was it? I can sing it, but I don't know the name of it. through the glass.
Yes.
Through the
No, just I think it's just through glass.
Oh,
yeah, something like that.
But I remember that's a little bit of a ballad, and I did not know then, at that time, that was Corey Taylor singing.
Yeah.
And now I know, and it's honestly destroying my brain.
Well, I don't know if I remember if I mentioned this on when we covered the self-titled, but for a long time I did not realize that Corey Taylor did like the singing also. I thought it was like two different vocalists.
Oh, really? I could see that because he's got that like really bad boy in a boy band voice, but then he also has the growls and it could sound like two people for sure.
Yeah, like in my head I just like thought you either yell or you sing. Like there's nobody that could do both. Like the only person I thought of that could do both was like Chester, but like that's
being that talented.
Yeah, like
I think Corey's voice is genuinely like butterier than like more swoony than even Chester's. Yeah. Like Chester's.
Oh, sorry, go ahead.
I could never see Chester Bennington doing like a Stone Sour kind of project.
No, and the thing about Corey Taylor's voice is like it's so perfect for that sound because like you said, like bad boy in a boy band where there's like just the slightest edge of roughness to it. Mm-hmm. Whereas like Chester, like when he sings, it's like straight up pretty. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like Corey has a little bit like like you were saying, like that like swoony kind of sound to it.
Yeah, I was like,
like almost like Roy Orbison-esque, like in a way.
I was so this record really highlighted that for me because they do so many ballads in this record. So mm-hmm. I was like, I feel very turned on. Like, what's happening? Yeah.
It's like a shockingly like horny album for Slipknot. Like, so when we think of like horny new metal bands, like obviously we think of, you know, Deftones number one, I would say.
Of course.
But like, I mean, the horniest band that's ever existed is Deftones.
Criminally so.
Like, it's actually insane. But like you don't think of Slipknot typically, but yeah, like they really do have some like bona fide like horny sounding moments on here. And I mean, like, Snuff is like a legitimate like heartfelt like ballad that could definitely play on like horny alt rock radio.
It's just, yeah, it really threw me for a loop. Like, and you know I hate Incubus, but that Butcher's Hook, is that the song?
Yeah.
That's the one where I feel like it has strong, strong Incubus influences during
it does.
In the vocals, but like the best parts. And I don't like Brandon's voice, but I really like Corey's voice. So like it worked for me. It was like, if Incubus sounded like this, I would fuck with Incubus.
Yeah, it's like that like rare moment where you're like, I can see where Incubus was like trying to go, but they did not do this as well as Slipknot did it.
Not for me.
Me neither. But yeah, like it is. I mean, the amount of ground that gets covered on this album, which I was looking at like the runtime, and it is like an hour and 15 minutes. And
it's
I know
not. That, what?
Yeah.
It's less than an hour.
Is it really?
Mm-hmm. It's short.
What? There's no way.
Maybe you have a like a bonus tracks version. Maybe you have like a physical copy or?
Oh yeah, I do. Cause mine has three bonus tracks. Cause mine has Child of Burning Time, a remix of Vermilion Part 2, and Till We Die, which is like the yeah, my bad. But when I was listening to it, I was listening to an hour and 12-minute version.
Okay.
But like, because of how varied it is, like sonically, because I know like when we did the self-titled, we talked about how it was a little bit of a slog towards the end because it's just so aggressive and angry the whole way through.
Yeah.
That it's like at a certain point you kind of like tune out. Like we might have mentioned it then too, but like there's like a thing that's like darkness induced audience apathy where it's like after a certain point of just everything being negative and aggressive, like an audience tends to like tune out.
Oh, for real?
Yeah.
I could see that. Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's definitely like, been like, sorry.
Like Eminem's entire career.
Yeah. And it's definitely been like a big criticism of like certain like filmmakers. Like I know like Michael Haneke has had that like leveled against him a lot where people are like, there's literally like nothing enjoyable about this at all. So like people like tune out after like 45 minutes. Mm-hmm. And like same with like I can't remember his name at the moment. Like non like late stage Ingmar Bergman where it's just like the saddest shit like all the time.
Mm-hmm.
But like I can see that happening with some Slipknot, but like this album like breaks it up with like, it breaks up the anger with like some more like, you know, like tender, like somber moments.
This is a very listenable album. I will say that. Like,
yeah,
when I did the first loop through, I was like, oh, okay. And I put it back on because normally after one listen of an album, I have to listen to something else. Like, I can't do a multiple runs, but I was able to do that with this album a couple times, so
very reasonable. I definitely like, in terms of the ones that we kind of like, whenever we like decide on an album and I start to listen to it, I typically will like listen once, listen to a couple other albums, and then like go back to it later, you know. This was like definitely the one I like listened to the most, like just like back to back. Because yeah, like it really does have like a really wide like sonic array of, you know, what it is. But it is like also, it doesn't lose any of that edge, I don't think, by having like the more, you know, kind of like quiet, somber moments.
No, I don't think so either. Like I feel like normally, and this is maybe a flaw of mine, but new metal and metal ballads make me laugh. Like I can't listen to them. I don't like actively think that they're funny or anything. I just can't take them seriously. Like I don't know what it is. Like maybe it's fucked up of me, probably, but I didn't feel that way at all with these Slipknot slower songs in this album. I really enjoyed them. Like I said, for me to say that I didn't hate them is huge. Like, I thought there were really beautiful, rich qualities in every single track.
Agreed, definitely. Like, I think there's really nothing like negative to be said about, like, it doesn't feel, because it also doesn't feel like they were like trying again, like going just to like them like being like sincere and like doing what they want to do as performers and like artists. Like, it doesn't feel like they were trying to incorporate something just for the sake of incorporating it. It felt like songs that they genuinely liked and wanted to put on here. Whereas I feel like a lot of like metal ballads, like one of maybe the reasons that they're like a little bit like inherently funny is because it does feel like somebody being like, I got to try to show my soft side. Like, I got to show that I can be deeper.
Yes.
It does. Whereas this didn't feel like that.
It does always have an air of trying to prove something instead of just trying to like write a song.
Yeah.
An effective song.
And like kind of in an interesting way, I feel like Slipknot almost exists on the opposite end of that, where I actually feel like they almost had more to prove when they were just trying to do exclusively abrasive music.
Yeah.
Because it kind of feels like that was never their actual end goal. Like, a lot of people have talked about them and said that like Slipknot never, like, one of the reasons that they're like a band that is nu metal but rejects the nu metal label is because like they kind of just like used a lot of the sound at the beginning because it was popular and then like just ended up liking it and incorporated it like more into their sound. But like, because like their like first like EP or whatever, Mate Feud Kill Repeat, is a lot more like industrial and like Nine Inch Nails-y kind of. Mm. But yeah, like I think they kind of had more to prove at the beginning, whereas like once they were famous and well established, like this album really doesn't at all feel like it's trying to prove anything.
No, it does not.
It feels like nine dudes from Iowa making music they want to make.
I read that this was the first album that they recorded in Iowa. And I also read that this was their first album where all nine members were actively involved in the songwriting process, which is really interesting when you look at how eclectic the final output is.
Yeah.
But it's really cool. I think it's really cool.
I do too. I think that also might be like part of the reason that it does feel so like from the heart is because like it doesn't, it's not necessarily just like one or, you know, like I don't know all the politics of their songwriting, but it's not like just a couple of them writing all the songs, then everybody else just like going along with it.
Right, 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 right.
Because I mean, I always, when I was a kid, I always thought the coolest guy was the guy who has all the nails sticking out of his mask. Mm-hmm. And I know he wrote the song Iowa, but I know that, like, other than that, he had said that he wasn't involved in a lot of the songwriting at all. Mm-hmm. He's a very, like, quiet man or whatever.
So fun. I love, that's a really funny visual. Just quietly putting on his little socks and then putting on his little nail mask and punching into his job.
Oh my gosh. I do remember he did have like a quote from one of their interviews where they had like, you know, been like, oh, like what would you have done if Slipknot hadn't, you know, taken off? Like if it wasn't your job. And he was just like, you know, this was back, like, I think, like, right after Iowa came out, so they were still, like, trying really hard to be, like, shocking and kind of, like, edgy and that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. He was like, I'd probably either be driving a forklift or killing people, and I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah, that's definitely, yeah, that's the vibe.
That's very, like, Midwestern attitude, I feel like.
Oh, my God.
That's why, like, Slipknot is probably, like, I mean, for a genre that is so deeply Midwestern now, but originated in California, like Slipknot is like the fact that they're from the Midwest and like the most famous, like actually Midwestern nu metal band makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Like just the level of like, cause also like, I do think there's like, because, like, with, like, Korn and stuff like that, like, there's, like, and, you know, Linkin Park and all of them, like, there's this, like, kind of aspect of California, I feel like, that does give them a bit of, like, that kind of, like, tie to performance.
Uh-huh.
And yeah, I think like Slipknot kind of eschews that a little bit, where it's the performance is so earnest in a way that it seems like they have no familiarity with performing. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. It is so perfectly put.
Oh my gosh.
Oh wow. Just like,
but yeah.
Oh, their whole heart is in it. And that's
exactly. Like, there's but but yeah, I guess all that to say, I do think this has been one of my favorite albums that we've covered on here for
sure. I agree. Yeah.
And
it took us so long to do this that it accidentally just became like a regular rotation album for
me. Yeah, I think that also like might be part of it, is like I just ended up listening to it so much in a way that it kind of like ingratiated itself deeper than maybe the other ones do, like when we're getting ready to record.
Yeah.
But I guess with that, we should kind of say our closing thoughts and our top three, of course. But yeah, I mean, again, like one of my favorites, definitely has just banger after banger on it.
It does. It does. I'm trying to pull up the track listing. I hope that in the time that we've been gone, Anchor has fixed the thing where if I go away from the Anchor screen, it stops recording me.
Oh, yeah.
This is going to be a really bad episode.
I've heard you the whole time, so
okay, good. Yeah, I noticed that it nothing has cut off, so
yeah,
I'm hoping for the best.
Yeah, unless only I can hear you, but for some reason it doesn't show up in the recording, which would be kind of funny, but
okay, so my top three, I think, you know, I'm a big fan of the three song run, and I love tracks two to four, yeah.
Yeah,
but not in that order. I mean, I love that they're in that order in the record. I think it's perfect, but I think obviously Psychosocial is a very obvious number one. No need to even try to build up to
that's it. Both of ours. Yeah, like that's like
number two would be The Killing Game. And then I think number three would be Soldier, but honestly, I could be convinced of any song for number three.
I could too. My top two are the same. And then my number three is All Hope Is Gone, the closing track.
Yeah, that was a strong contender as well
for me. Yeah, like you said, though, honestly, you could convince me of just about any song on this album, and I would be like, I agree with that. Like, if somebody, like, listens to this episode and texts me and is like, this Cold Black is actually my number three, I'd be like, you know what? Yeah, like,
I initially wrote that as my number three.
And then it's really close for me. That's why I said it.
And then as I finished my last run through, I kept changing my mind. So I was like, yeah, I'm just going to tell them, like, the honest truth is number three could be any song on the record. Like,
it could. I agree 100%. Yeah, I mean, I think we picked a great episode to, you know, an album to return.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, yeah, we really nailed down the essence of the podcast here.
That, I think that's beautiful. Like, we have a strong framework.
Yeah. We have an ethos now.
And it only took us like 13 episodes.
So. And like a long hiatus. But right.
I was going to say, not really a closing thought, but we are gonna see Slipknot pretty soon, so I'm very excited. It's the first time in my life.
Hell yes.
And we're gonna be pretty close up because we waited too long. We didn't know that they were coming, so
hell yes.
Yeah, but I'm very excited, looking forward to it.
Yeah, that
there's a 12-year-old me who had not heard a single Slipknot song but was telling people I was a Slipknot fan that is very proud of me right now.
Hell fucking yes. And there is the current me with a Slipknot ass tattoo who's very proud of
I think like that's how this friendship started.
I think it is, like, honestly. This has been an absolute blast, though. I'm so glad that we're back.
Yes, we're back. Do you have any idea what you want the next album to be, or should we keep it a surprise for the people?
I think we should keep it a surprise because I have a couple ideas.
I have one idea, which I will tell you as soon as we hang up.
Okay.
And no rush, but it would be, the timing is pretty good for this record.
Okay. I will. That works for me.
All right. Well, with that, we leave you wanting for more. We hope that you have enjoyed this comeback episode of Corn Fed.